Sarge? Yes, Nobby? Tell me again about our special qualities. Shut up and keep peddling, Nobby. Right, Sarge. It was quite dark in the boat. A candle swung from a bracket over Leonard of Querm's bowed head as he sat steering with two levers. Around Nobby, pulleys rattled and little chains clicked. It was like being inside a sewing machine. A damp one, too. Condensation dropped off the ceiling in a steady stream. They had been peddling for 10 minutes. Leonard had spent most of the time talking excitedly. Nobby got the impression he didn't get out much. He talked about everything. There were the tanks of air, for example. Nobby was happy to accept that you could squeeze air up really small, and that was what was in the groaning, creaking, steel-bound casks strapped to the walls. It was what happened to the air afterwards that came as a surprise. "Bubbles," said Leonard. "Dolphins again, you see. They don't swim through the water, they fly through a cloud of bubbles, which is much easier, of course. I add a little soap, which seems to improve matters."
"He thinks dolphins fly, Sarge," whispered Nobby.
"Just keep paddling." Sergeant Colon risked a glance behind him. Lord Vetinari was sitting on an upturned box, amidst the clicking chains, with several of Leonard's sketches open on his knees.
"Carry on, Sergeant," said the patrician.
"Right, sir."
The boat was moving faster now they were away from the city. There was even a brackish light filtering through the little glass windows.
"Mr. Leonard," said Nobby.
"Yes?"
"Where are we going?"
"His lordship wishes to go to Lesp."
"Yes, I thought it would be something like that," said Nobby.
"I thought, where don't I want to go?" And the answer just popped into my head just like that. "Only I don't think we'll get there, the reason being in about another 5 minutes my knees are going to fall off."
"Oh, my word, you won't have to pedal all the way," said Leonard. "What do you think the big auger on the nose is for?"
"That," said Nobby, "I thought that was for drilling into the bottom of enemy ships."
"What?"
Leonard spun around in his seat, a look of horror on his face.
"Sink ships? Sink ships with people on them?"
"Well, yes."
"Corporal Nobbs, I think you are a very misguided young man," said Leonard stiffly. "Use the boat to sink ships. That would be terrible. In any case, no sailor would dream of doing such a dishonourable thing."
"Sorry. The auger, I would have you know, is for attaching us to passing ships in the manner of the remora, the suckerfish which attaches itself to sharks. A few turns is all that is necessary for a firm attachment."
"So you couldn't bore all the way through the hull, then?"
"Only if you were a very careless and extremely thoughtless young man."
The ocean waves may not be ploughable, but the crust of the River Ankh downstream from the city was known to sprout small bushes in the summertime. The Milker moved slowly, leaving a furrow behind it.
"Can't you go faster?" said Vimes.
"Why, certainly," said Jenkins nastily. "Where would you like us to put the extra mast?"
"The ship's just a dot," said Carrot. "Why aren't we gaining on them?"
"It's a bigger ship, so it's got what we technically call more sails," said Jenkins. "And they're fast hulls on those Clatchian boats, and we've got a full hold."
He stopped, but it was too late.
"Captain Carrot," said Vimes.
"Sir, throw everything overboard," said Vimes. "Not the crossbows. They cost more than $100 each."
Jenkins stopped. Vimes's expression said very clearly that there were a whole lot of things that could be thrown off the boat, and it would be a good idea not to be among them.
"Go and pull some ropes, Mr. Jenkins," he said.
He watched the captain stamp off. A few moments later, there was a splash. Vimes looked over the side and saw a crate bob for a moment and then sink, and he felt happy. Thief-taker, Rust had called him. The man had meant it as an insult, but it'd do. Theft was the only crime, whether the loot was gold, innocence, land, or life. And for the thief-taker, there was the chase. There were several more splashes. Vimes fancied the ship surged forwards. The chase. Because the chase was simpler than the capture. Once you'd caught someone, it got complicated. But the chase was pure and free. Much better than prodding at clues and peering at notebooks. He flees, I chase. Simple. Vetinari's terrier,
"Bingley, bingley, bingley, beep,"
said his pocket. "Don't tell me," said Vimes. "It's something like 5 p.m. at sea, yes?"
No, said the disorganiser. Says here, violent row with Lord Rust, insert name here.
Aren't you supposed to tell me what I'm going to do? Said Vimes, opening the box.
What you should be doing, said the demon, looking very worried. What you should be doing. I don't understand it. Something seems to be wrong.
Angua stopped trying to rub the collar off against the bulkhead. It wasn't working, and the silver pressing against her skin seemed to freeze her and burn her at the same time. Apart from that, and a silver collar on a werewolf was a fairly major that, she'd been treated well. They'd left a plate of food, a wooden plate, and she'd let her wolf side eat it while the human side shut its eyes and held its nose. There was a bowl of water, quite fresh by Ankh-Morpork standards. She could see the bottom of the bowl, at least. It was so hard to think in wolf shape. It was like trying to unlock a door while drunk. It was possible, but you had to concentrate every step of the way. There was a sound. Her ears pricked up. Something tapped once or twice under the hull. She hoped it was a reef. That meant land, possibly. With any luck, she could swim ashore. Something clinked. She'd forgotten about the chain. It was hardly necessary. She felt as weak as a kitten. There was a rhythmic noise, like something chewing at the wood. A tiny metal point splintered through the wall just in front of her nose and rose an inch. And someone spoke. It sounded far off and distorted, and perhaps only a werewolf would have heard it, but words were happening somewhere under her paws.
Can stop peddling now, Corporal Nobbs.
I am knackered, Sarge. Is there anything to eat? There's some more of that garlic sausage, or there's the cheese or cold beans.
We're in a tin with no air and we're supposed to eat cheese. I ain't even gonna comment on the beans.
I'm very sorry, gentlemen. Things were rather rushed and I had to take food which would keep.
It's just that it's getting a bit crowded, if you get my meaning.
I will pay out the rope as soon as it's dark and we can surface and take on air.
Just so long as we get rid of the air we've got, that's all I'm saying.
Angua's brows wrinkled as she tried to make sense of this. The voices were familiar. Even muffled as they were, she recognised the tones. The vague feeling that fought its way through the mists of animal intellect was friends. The tiny little unchangeable centre of her thought, good grief, next thing I'll be licking hands. She laid her head down near the point again.
Way to do it, young man. There you go again. Sink ships. I can't imagine how anyone could think of such a thing.
Names. Some of those voices had names. Thinking was getting harder. That was the silver at work. But if she stopped, she might forget how to start again. She stared at the point of metal, the point of metal with sharp edges. The tiny human part of her mind raged at the wolf brain, trying to get it to understand what it needed to do. It was after midnight. The lookout man knelt on the deck in front of 71-hour Ahmed and trembled.
I know what I saw, Wali, he moaned. And the others saw it too. Something rose up behind the ship and began chasing us. A monster.
Ahmed looked at the captain, who shrugged.
Who knows what lies on the floor of the sea, Wali?
It's breath, moaned the seaman. There was a great roar of breath like the stink of a thousand privies, and then it spoke.
Really, said Ahmed. This is not unusual. What did it say?
I did not understand.
The man's face screwed up as he tried to assemble the unfamiliar syllables.
It sounded like, he swallowed and went on, ye gods, that was better out than in, Sarge.
Ahmed stared at him.
And what did that mean to you, he said.
I do not know, Wali.
You have not spent much time in Ankh-Morpork?
No, Wali.
Then return to your post.
The man stumbled out.
We have lost speed, Wali, said the captain.
Perhaps the sea monster is clutching at our keel.
It pleases you to joke, Lord, but who knows what has been disturbed by the rising of the new land?
I shall have to see for myself, said 71-hour Ahmed.
He walked alone to the stern of the ship. Dark waters sucked and splashed and left a phosphorescent glow edging the wake. He watched for a long time. People bad at watching didn't last long in the desert, where a shadow in the moonlight could be just a shadow, or it could be someone anxious to help you on your way to paradise. The dregs came across many shadows of the latter persuasion.
Dereg wasn't their name for themselves, although they tended to adopt it now out of pride. The word meant enemy. Everyone's. And if anyone else wasn't around, then one another's. If he concentrated, he might believe that there was a darker shape about 100 yards behind the ship, very low in the water. Waves were breaking where waves shouldn't be. It looked as though the ship was being followed by a reef. Well, well. 71-hour Ahmed was not superstitious. He was substitious, which put him in a minority among humans. He didn't believe in the things everyone believed in, but which nevertheless weren't true. He believed instead in the things that were true, in which no one else believed. There are many such substitions, ranging from "it'll get better if you don't pick at it," all the way up to "sometimes things just happen." Currently, he was disinclined to believe in sea monsters, especially ones that spoke in the language of Ankh-Morpork, but he did believe that there were a lot of things in the world that he didn't know about. In the far distance, he could see the lights of a ship. It didn't seem to be gaining on them. This was much more worrying. In the darkness, 71-hour Ahmed reached over his shoulder and grasped the handle of his sword. Above him, the mainsail creaked in the wind. Sergeant Colon knew he was facing one of the most dangerous moments in his career. There was nothing for it. He was out of options.
If I add this A and this O and this I and this D, he said, the sweat pouring down his pink cheeks, then I can use that V to make a void. And that gets me, what do you call these blue squares, Len?
Three times ye value of the letter score, said Leonard of Quirm.
Well done, Sergeant, said Lord Veterinary. I do believe that puts you in the lead.
I do believe it does, sir, squeaked Sergeant Colon.
However, I find that you have left me the use of my U, N, and A, B, L, E, the patrician went on, which incidentally lands me on this three times the whole word square, and I rather suspect wins me the game.
Sergeant Colon sagged with relief.
A capital game, Leonard, said Veterinari. What did you say it was called?
I call it the make words with letters that have all been mixed up game, my lord.
Ah, yes, obviously. Well done. And I got 3 points, mumbled Nobby. They was perfectly good words that you wouldn't let me have to.
I'm sure the gentlemen don't want to know those words, said Colon severely.
I'd have got 10 points for that X.
Leonard looked up.
Strange, we seem to have stopped moving.
He reached up and opened the hatch. Damp night air poured in, and there was the sound of voices quite close, echoing loudly as voices do when heard across water.
Heathen clatchy and talk, said Colon. What are they gabbling about?
What nephew of a camel cut the rigging, said Lord Veterinary, without looking up. Not just the ropes, look at this sail. Here, give me a hand.
I didn't know you spoke Clatchian, my lord.
Not a word, said Lord Veterinary. But you...
I did not, said Veterinary calmly.
Ah, right. Where are we, Leonard?
Well, my star charts are all out of date, of course, but if you would care to wait until the sun rises, and I've invented a device for ascertaining position by reference to the sun, and devised a satisfactorily accurate watch...
Where are we now, Leonard?
In the middle of the Circle Sea, I suspect.
The middle?
Pretty close, I should say. Look, if I can measure the wind speed...
Then Leshp should be in this vicinity?
Oh, yes, I should...
Good. Unhitch us from this apparently stricken ship while we still have the cover of darkness, and in the morning I wish to see this troublesome land. In the meantime, I suggest that everyone get some sleep.
Sergeant Colon did not get a lot of sleep. This was partly because he was woken up several times by sawing and banging coming from the front of the boat, and partly because the water kept dripping on his head, but mainly... because the lull in activity was causing him to consider his position. Sometimes when he woke up, he saw the patrician hunched over Leonard's drawings, a gaunt silhouette in the light of the candle, reading, making notes. He was in the immediate company of a man even the Assassin's Guild was frightened of, another man who would stay up all night in order to invent an alarm clock to wake him up in the morning, and a man who had never knowingly changed his underwear. And he was at sea. He tried to look on the bright side, What was the main reason why he hated boats? The fact that they sank, right? But this one had the sinking built in right from the start. And you didn't have to watch the waves going up and down because they were already above you. All this was logical. It just wasn't very comforting. When he awoke at one point, there were faint voices coming from the other end of the vessel.
"Don't quite understand, my lord. Why, then?"
"They do what they're told. They tend to believe the last thing they heard. They're not bright enough to ask questions, and they have that certain unshakable loyalty available to those unencumbered by too much intelligence."
"I suppose so, my lord."
"Such men are valuable, believe me." Sergeant Colon turned over and tried to make himself comfortable. "Glad I'm not like those poor bastards," he thought as he drifted off to sleep on the bosom of the deep. "I'm a man with special qualities." Vimes shook his head. The stern light of the Clatchian ship was barely visible in the gloom.
"Are we gaining on them?" he said.
Captain Jenkins nodded.
"We might be. There's a lot of sea between us."
"And has all excess weight been thrown overboard?"
"Yes. What do you want me to do, shave my beard off?"
Carrot's face appeared over the edge of the hold.
"All the lads are bedded down, sir."
"Right.
I'll turn in for a few hours too, sir, if it's all right with you."
"Sorry, Captain."
"I'll get my head down, sir."
But... Vimes waved vaguely at the darkening horizon.
"We're in hot pursuit of your girlfriend, among other things," he added.
"Yes, sir."
"So aren't you... You mean you can... You want to... Captain, you intend to go and have a bit of a nap?"
"To refresh for when we catch up with them, yes, sir. If I spend the whole night staring out there worrying, then I'll probably be a bit useless when we catch up with them, sir." It made sense. It really did make sense. Of course it made sense. Vimes could see the sense all over it. Carrot had actually sat down and thought sensibly about things.
"You'll be able to get to sleep, will you?" he said weakly.
"Oh, yes. I owe it to Angua."
"Oh. Well, good night, then."
Carrot disappeared into the hold again.
"Good heavens," said Jenkins. "Is he real?"
"Yes," said Vimes.
"I mean, would you go and bang your ear if we was chasing your lady in that ship?"
Vimes said nothing. Jenkins sniggered.
"Mind you, if it was Lady Sybil, she'd be a bit lower on the waterline."
"You just watch the sea. Don't run into any damn whales or anything," said Vimes,
and strode up to the sharp end. Carrot, he thought. If you didn't know him, you wouldn't believe it.
"They're slowing, Mr. Vimes," Jenkins called out.
"What?"
"I reckon they're slowing down," I said.
"Good.
So what are you going to do when we catch them?"
Vimes hadn't given this a lot of thought, but he recalled a very bad woodcut he'd once seen in a book about pirates.
"We'll swing across onto them with our cutlasses in our teeth," he said.
"Really?" said Jenkins. "That's good. I haven't seen that done in years. Only ever seen it done once, in fact."
"Oh, yes.
Yeah, this lad had seen the idea in a book, and he swung across into the other ship's rigging with his cutlass clenched, as you say, between his teeth."
"Yes. Topless Harry, we wrote on his coffin."
"Oh. I don't know if you've ever seen a soft-boiled egg after you picked up your knife and slight. All right, I see the point. What do you suggest?"
"Grapnels. You can't beat grapnels. Catch them on the other ship and just pull them towards you."
"And you've got grapnels?"
"Oh, yes. Saw some only today, in fact."
"Good.
Then, as I recall," Jenkins went on relentlessly, "it was when your Sergeant Detritus was chucking stuff over the side and he said, 'What shall we do with these bendy hooky things, sir?' And someone, can't recall his name just at this minute, said, 'They are dead weight, throw them over.'"
"Why didn't you say something?"
"Oh, well, I didn't like to," said Jenkins. "You were doing so well."
"Don't mess me about, Captain, otherwise I'll clap you in irons."
"No, you ain't going to do that, and I'll tell you why. First, because when Captain Carrot said, 'These chains, sir, what shall I do with them?' You said, 'Now listen, you.' And second, I don't reckon you know anything about ships. Oh, dearie me. We don't clap people in irons, we put them in chains. Do you know how to splice the main brace? Because I don't. All that yo-ho-ho stuff's for landlubbers, or it would be if we ever used words like landlubber. Do you know the difference between port and starboard? I don't. I've never even drunk starboard. Shiver my timber."
"Isn't it shiver my timbers?"
I've been ill. Captain Jenkins spun the wheel. Also, this is a frisky wind, and me and my crew know how to pull the strings that make the big square canvas things work properly. If your men tried it, you'd soon find out how far it is to land. How far is it to land? About 30 fathoms hereabouts. The light was noticeably nearer.
Bingley, 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 beep.
Good grief, what now? Said Vimes.
8 p.m. Narrowly escape assassination by Clatchian spy.
Vimes went cold. Where? He said, looking around wildly.
Corner of Brewer Street and Broadway,
said the little sing-song voice. But I'm not there.
What's the point of having appointments, then? What's the point of my making an effort? You told me you wanted to know what you ought to...
Listen, you don't have an appointment for being assassinated. The demon went silent for a moment and then said,
You mean it should be on your to-do list?
Its voice was trembling. You mean like to-do, die?
Look, it's no good taking it out on me just because you're not on the right timeline.
What the hell does that mean?
Aha! I knew you didn't read the manual. Chapter 7, 2C makes it very clear that sticking to one reality is vitally important, otherwise the uncertainty principle says...
Forget I asked, all right. Vimes glared at Jenkins and at the distant ship. We'll do this my way, wherever the hell we are, he said. He strode to the hold and pulled aside a hatchway. Detritus! The Clatchian sailors struggled with the canvas while their captain screamed at them. 71-hour Ahmed didn't scream. He just stood with his sword in his hand, watching. The captain hurried over to him, trembling with fear and holding a length of rope.
See, Wally, he said, someone cut it. Who would do that?
Said 71-hour Ahmed quietly.
I do not know, but when I find him... The dogs are almost on us, said Ahmed. You and your men will work faster. Who could have done such a thing? Said the captain. You were here. How could they...
His gaze flickered from the cut rope to the sword.
Was there something you wished to say? Said Ahmed.
The captain hadn't got where he was by being stupid. He spun around.
Get that sail up right now, you festering sons of bitches, he screamed.
Good,
said 71-hour Ahmed. Detritus's crossbow was originally a 3-man siege weapon, but he had removed the windlass as an unnecessary encumbrance. He cocked it by hand. Usually the mere sight of the troll pulling the string back with one finger was enough to make the strong-willed surrender. He looked doubtfully at the distant light.
It's a million to one chance, he said. Got to be closer than this.
Just hit it below the waterline so they can't cut the rope, said Vimes.
Right, right.
What's the problem, Sergeant?
We're heading for Clatch, right?
Well, in that direction, yes.
Only I'm going to be really stupid in Clatch because of the heat, right?
I hope we're going to stop them before we get there, Detritus.
I ain't keen on being stupid. I know people say, that troll Detritus, he's thicker than a
brick sandwich, said Vimes, staring at the light.
Right, only I hearin' it get really, really hot in the desert.
The troll looked so mournful that Vimes felt moved to give him a cheerful slap on the back.
Then let's stop them now, eh? He said, shaking his hand hurriedly to stop the stinging.
The other ship was so close they could see the sailors working feverishly on the deck. The mainsail billowed in the lamplight. Detritus raised the bow. A ball of blue-green light glowed on the tip of the arrow. The troll stared at it. Then green fire ran down the masts, and when it hit the deck, burst into dozens of green balls that rolled, cracking and spitting, over the planks.
They're using magic?
Said Detritus. A green flame spluttered over his helmet.
What is this, Jenkins? Said Vimes.
It ain't magic. It's worse than magic, said the captain, hurrying forward. All right, lads, get those sails down right now.
You leave them where they are, shouted Vimes.
You know what this is? It don't even feel warm, said Detritus, poking the flame on the crossbow. Don't touch it. Don't touch it. That's St. Ungulant's fire, that is. It means we're going to die in a dreadful storm.
Vimes looked up. Clouds were racing across. No, they were pouring into the sky in great twisting billows, like ink streaming into water. Blue light flashed somewhere inside them. The ship lurched.
Look!
"We've got to lose some sail," shouted Jenkins. "That's the only way."
"No one touches anything," shouted Vimes. Green fire skimmed along the tops of the waves now. "Detritus, arrest any man who touches anything."
"Right."
"We want to go fast, after all," Vimes said, above the hissing and the distant crackle of thunder. Jenkins gawped at him as the ship lunged beneath them.
"You're mad. Have you any idea what happens to a ship that tries—" "You haven't got any idea, have you? This isn't normal weather. You have to ride it out careful. You can't try to run ahead of it."
Something slippery landed on Detritus's head and bounced onto the deck, where it tried to slither away.
"And now it's raining fish," Jenkins moaned.
The clouds formed a yellow haze, lit almost constantly by the lightning. And it was warm. That was the strangest thing. The wind howled like a sackful of cats, and the waves were turning into walls on either side of the ship, but the air felt like an oven.
"Look, even the Clachians are reducing sail," shouted Jenkins in a shower of shrimp.
"Good, we'll catch them up."
"Mad, ouch!"
Something hard rebounded from his hat, hit the rail and rolled to a stop by Vimes's feet. It was a brass knob.
"Oh, no!" moaned Jenkins, putting his arms over his head. "Now it's bloody bedsteads again!"
The captain of the Clachian ship was not an argumentative man when he was anywhere near 71-hour Ahmed. He just looked at the straining sails and calculated his chances of paradise.
"Perhaps the dog who cut the sail loose did us a favour," he shouted above the roar of the wind. Ahmed said nothing. He kept looking back. The occasional burst of electric storm light showed the ship behind aflame with green light. Then he looked at the cold fire streaming behind their own masts.
"Can you see that light on the edge of the flames?" he said.
"My lord?"
"Can you, man?"
No.
"Of course you can't. But can you see where the light isn't?"
The captain stared at him and then looked up again in terrified obedience. And there was somewhere where the light wasn't. As the fizzing green tongues waved in the wind, they seemed to be edged with blackness, perhaps, or a moving hole in space.
"That's Octarine," shouted Ahmed,
as another wave sloshed over the deck.
"Only wizards can see it. There's magic in these storms. That's why the weather is so bad."
The ship screamed in every joint as it hit the waves again.
"We're coming right out the water," wept Jenkins. "We're just going from crest to crest."
"Good. It won't be so bumpy," shouted Vimes. "We should pick up speed again now we've got those bedsteads over the side. Does it often raid bedsteads out here?"
"What do you think?"
"I'm not a nautical man."
"No, rains of bedsteads are not an everyday occurrence, nor are coal scuttles,"
Jenkins added as something black crashed off a rail and over the side.
"We just get the normal stuff, you know, rain, snow, sleet, fish."
Another squall blew across the bounding boat and the deck was suddenly covered with flashing silver.
"Back to fish," shouted Vimes. "That's better, surely."
"No, it's worse."
"Why?"
Jenkins held up a tin.
"These are sardines."
The ship thumped into another wave, groaned and took flight again. The cold green fire was everywhere. Every nail of the deck sprouted its flame. Every rope and ladder had its green outline. And the feeling crept over Vimes that it was holding the ship together. He wasn't at all sure that it was just light. It moved too purposefully. It crackled, but it didn't sting. It looked as though it was having fun. The ship landed. Water washed over Vimes.
"Captain Jenkins?"
"Yes?"
"Why are we playing with this wheel? It's not as if the rudder's in the water."
They let go. The spokes blurred for a moment and then stopped as the fire wrapped itself around them. Then it rained cake. The watch had tried to make themselves comfortable in the hold, but there were difficulties. There wasn't any area of floor, which at some point in every 10 seconds wasn't an area of wall. Nevertheless, someone was snoring.
"How can anyone sleep in this?"
said Red Shoe.
"Captain Carrot can," said Cheery.
She was hacking at something with her axe. Carrot had wedged himself into a corner. Occasionally he mumbled something and shifted position.
"Like a baby. Beats me how he's managing it," said Red Shoe. "Of course, any minute this thing is going to fall apart."
"Yeah, but that shouldn't worry you, should it?" said Detritus. "On account of you being dead already."
"So, I end up at the bottom of the sea, knee-deep in whale droppings, and it'll be a long walk home in the dark, not to mention the problems if a shark tries to eat me."
"I shall fear not. According to the testament of Meserek, the fisherman Nonpur spent 4 days in the belly of a giant fish,"
said Constable Visit. The thunder seemed particularly loud in the silence.
"Washpot, are we talking miracles here?" said Reg eventually, "or just a very slow digestive process?"
"You would be better employed considering the state of your immortal soul than making jokes," said Constable Visit severely.
"It's the state of my immortal body that's worrying me," said Reg.
"I have a leaflet here which will bring you considerable..." Visit began.
"Washpot, is it big enough to be folded into a boat that'll save us all?"
Constable Visit pounced on the opening.
"Aha! Yes, metaphorically, it is." "Hasn't this ship got a lifeboat?" said Cheery hurriedly. "I'm sure I saw one when we came on."
"Yeah, lifeboat," said Detritus.
"Anyone want a sardine?" said Cheery. "I've managed to get a tin open."
"Lifeboat,"
Detritus repeated. He sounded like someone exploring an unpleasant truth.
"Like a big, heavy thing which would have slowed us down."
"Yes, I saw it. I know I did," said Reg.
"Yeah, there was one," said Detritus. "That was a lifeboat, was it?"
"At the very least, we ought to get somewhere sheltered and drop the anchor."
"Yeah. Anchor," mused Detritus. "That's a big thing, kind of hooks on, right?"
"Of course.
Kind of heavy thing, obviously."
"Right, and if it was dropped a long time ago on account of being heavy, that wouldn't do us much good now."
"Hardly." Red Shoe glared through the hatchway. The sky was a dirty yellow blanket crisscrossed with fire. Thunder boomed continuously.
"I wonder how far the barometer sunk," he said.
"All the way," said Detritus gloomily. "Trust me on this."